I think he's so silly. Here comes the colonel.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Every smart comedian in the world is going to come by here and interrupt a serious science program. All right. Welcome back to the second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. In just a minute, we're going to get to that interview with Adrian Hopkins. We've had a difficult time running him down ever since we learned about him from Tala de los Santos and the river blindness story we did a few weeks ago. It's been tough finding him. And, of course, at the end of the program, the listener comments are the voice of reason. But right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information and ask today's query. What do you say?
Welcome to the Fountain of Useless Information. How can I help you?
Aha, yes, we've thrown in the coins, and now we have aroused the spirit of the fountain. All right, oh, spirit of the fountain. Here is today's query. This should be an easy one for you. You know everything about dogs, don't you? Well, here's a good dog question. How many heads did the mythical dog Cerberus have? How many heads? The mythical dog Cerberus. How many heads did Cerberus have?
I have given you my answer. And now you may tell the others.
The spirit of the fountain knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all for a price. Yes, 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 of course. The mythical dog Cerberus had 3 heads. I don't know what they were good for. I guess he had no trouble cleaning himself in various different places all at one time. Anyway, all right, back to our program. And our thanks once again to the Science News Studio Band taking us to the next interview. And we've been telling you about this ever since we had Tala de los Santos on the program several months back, telling us about the test that her company, PATH, has come up with to detect river blindness, and how Merck, the pharmaceutical company, is giving away massive doses, I mean really massive doses, of the medicine that it takes to stamp out river blindness. We've been looking to try to find Adrian Hopkins of Merck to come on the program and tell us about it. And we, after months of searching, we finally ran him down. He had a brief period of time to talk to us, and this is how it went.
Hello.
Well, Adrian, this is Colonel Mason with the Science News Radio Network. I'm so glad to connect with you.
Yeah, glad we managed to make it in the end.
Yeah, it was touch and go. What have you been doing?
Well, I'm always traveling. I'm also partly based in the UK, so but the job basically we work with river blindness and lymphatic filariasis, other neglected tropical diseases. Most of those are in highly prevalent in Africa, so there's a lot of travel to Africa to see how the programs are going and supervise, not really supervise, but help programs as they develop. A lot of travel to Africa.
Absolutely. Well, you were told to me by Tala de los Santos, who works with you on the river blindness drugs and that sort of thing. She told me that Merck donates a lot of the river blindness drug. And I said, well, that's a news story, because a lot of people don't, I didn't know about it, so I presume a lot of people don't know about that. And pharmaceutical companies get such a bad rap because there's all this talk that they're overcharging and they can make the stuff really cheaper. And I think it's a good story, the fact that, of the good that you do, and that story I don't think gets out enough. Don't you agree?
Well, I think, I think it depends on the particular company. I have to say that Merck keep a very low profile. This donation has been going on for 25 years. And in fact, if you look at Central America, the programs there that have been going are actually achieving quite remarkable results. With Colombia, a few weeks ago I was in Colombia, it was basically celebration of the verification that Colombia is now river blindness free, and it was a great event. And you know, if you'd imagine that 25 years ago when the donation was first announced, I don't think anyone would have sort of dreamed of that. And now we're talking about actually eliminating these diseases, and it's through donated drugs. You know, Merck by far been going on the longest, but GSK followed to help get rid of lymphatic filariasis. That's another elimination program that's well underway. And now other drug companies have actually come along to donate drugs to at least control some of the worst diseases that affect basically the bottom billion of the population.
Well, this is really something, I think. I mean, I'm of the opinion that it is quite laudable. It is incredibly laudable that Merck would do this, because I could imagine that if they had to buy these drugs, we're talking about hundreds and thousands of dollars, and you've been doing it for like 25 years or so. Do you have, probably don't, but at hand, any numbers about how much money has been saved the third world from the developing world from donations from Merck and other drug companies?
We haven't really done an impact survey in the sense of the financial help. There has been a paper done generally on the neglected tropical diseases, which is trying to look at the economic benefit as a sort of broad range of things, not just the drugs, but the implementation and so on, what the cost-benefit relationship is. And it's really quite remarkable. Different attempts have been made, but these are very difficult. These are diseases that are chronic disabling diseases. Blindness is a chronic disease. Sure, it kills in poor countries. If you go blind, your life is shortened by somewhere between 8 and 12 years, depending on the country. So, you have a much shorter expectation of life. We know we've had a major impact, for example, on river blindness. If we were to now look at new cases of river blindness, which were estimated at somewhere around 40,000 to 50,000 a year 25 years ago, you'd be hard put to find any patients now who become blind through this disease, except perhaps in remote parts of South Sudan or the Congo, where because of conflict, the drugs perhaps have not got there. But even in those most remote areas, we're getting the drugs out there. We treated last year for river blindness over 90 million people in Africa, which is really a remarkable achievement if you think of where these people are. We often say they're not only at the end of the road, they're often people beyond the end of the road. And so, Merck donated the drugs last year for over 100 million people for river blindness alone, and various organizations then help distribute. Merck will deliver the drugs to the government warehouse, and then the government programs help distribute the drugs to those most in need. And as I said, very often they're the poorest and the most remote populations.
100 million people, that's a staggering figure. I mean, even if it just cost a dollar a person, you're talking about $100 million, and we know it costs more than that because you got to manufacture the drug, you got to ship it, you got to store it, you got to distribute it, you got to watch it, you got to monitor it, you got to do all the things that go with it. We're talking about a phenomenal amount of good that the pharmaceutical companies, Merck is a leader, is doing in the world, and nobody's beating a drum over this. Now, this is, really, I think this is a big, 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 big thing. Why does Merck keep a low profile on this?
When the donation was made initially, they discovered it was actually a little bit by accident. They discovered that there was an effect on certain filarial diseases in the veterinary field, and so they did spend a lot of money developing a drug for human use, and then did the right relevant trials, including community trials of the drug, all the normal things that one has to do to get a drug approved. And then they realized basically that the people who need this medication are people who couldn't afford it. You know, the price of a tablet is estimated around $1.5 a tablet. The average adult needs 3 tablets.
Wow.
Not an awful lot of money per person, but you add that up to 100 million people.
Oh, yeah.
It comes to a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
So the people who really need the drug are not able to afford even that amount. And so basically when they realize that the people who need the drug can't buy it, they said, well, here's a drug. We can't just let it sit on the shelves. We need to give it away. So it was a purely humanitarian gesture. You know, in these days, if people were, I mean, that was 25 years ago, but if people to ask, you know, what's the business plan today, there would be a disastrous business plan. It was never envisaged to be either a promotional thing or a money-making thing. They realized, Merck realized, basically, they had a drug. It could help a lot of people. The people who really needed it couldn't buy it, so they decided to give it away.
So often around the world, the United States is known as the great Satan and all these other things because of our excesses and the things that we do, and sometimes that criticisms can be justified with some of the things that we do. But this is something that really, I think, shows the world the generosity of some of our commercial enterprises. And I think that it's sad that we haven't been able to beat the drum over this. Maybe Merck doesn't want to beat its own drum, but people like us in the press, you know, we need to be doing it for you. Merck isn't opposed to talking about this, are they?
No, they're not opposed to it. They're not particularly interested in as you say themselves making a big issue of it. They do occasionally produce press releases, for example. There was a press release over the Colombian celebration last month. So there are press releases around that, but I think you'll find actually the drug companies in this respect slightly different policies between different different pharma companies. But generally they keep a fairly low profile on this, and now, you know, Merck made this donation back in 1987. In 1998, GSK made the announcement they were going to donate albendazole, another drug, for lymphatic filariasis elimination. Now, that drug has to be given either with ivermectin or Mectizan or with another drug called difelcarbamazine. In Africa, you can't use difelcarbamazine because difelcarbamazine is dangerous where you have river blindness. So, you know, that was an extension of the Merck donation, and actually that's now a bigger donation than the donation for river blindness, because lymphatic filariasis or elephantiasis, you know, where people get these very big limbs due to poor lymphatic drainage. That's a disease that we are hoping to actually eliminate much more quickly than river blindness now. We hope to eliminate that by 2020. But here are two rival, if you like, commercial rivals. GSK and Merck actually coordinate, so that two drugs can be used together. And this has been going on since 1998. And again, very low profile, not many people talk about it. What has brought it a little bit more to the people's attention was a major event in London about a year and a half ago, January, where there was a special event with produced a declaration called the London Declaration. And that was a declaration to fight the neglected tropical diseases, one of which is river blindness, another one is lymphatic filariasis, but there are others there, intestinal worms, for example. We know that intestinal worms affect children's, not only their physical development, but their intellectual development, and we realize now that, you know, mass drug administration to control intestinal worms has a major impact on these children's lives. So these are more donated drugs, more albendazole from GSK, mebendazole from J&J. The DEC that I mentioned, which has to be used in lymphatic filariasis, that's now donated by a Japanese company called SI. Praziquantel for bilharzia, that's donated by Merck KGA, that's a German company, not the same as Merck in the US. And in fact, we get round the table. For the last 5 years, I've been chair of a committee which is called the Partnership for Disease Control Initiatives, PDCI.
Yes.
And all the pharmaceutical companies sit around the table and look at what are the common issues and how do we resolve those issues in terms of getting the drugs out that will help control these chronic diseases for, as I say, the bottom billion or bottom 1.4 billion population who
wow.
live under a dollar a day
oh,
and who are mostly affected by these chronic diseases. And, you know, the London Declaration, if you go on the web and look up that, you can see the commitments that were made there, not just by the drug companies themselves, but, you know, WHO is there to offer the guidelines, the norms and guidelines we need. USAID, for example, or DFID in the UK, these major government donations, the World Bank are there. It was really a whole partnership around what can we do for that bottom 1.4 million people.
Wow. Adrian, could you tell me, what is your title with Merck? I know you have one. I ran across it someplace, but I don't know what it is offhand.
I'm not actually employed by Merck directly. I'm director of the Mectizan Donation Program, and Merck, when they set this up 25 years ago, the donation of Mectizan, set up a sort of basically an independent technical review and advisory body, so that we review all the drug applications that come in, both for onchocerciasis and for lymphatic filariasis in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
We review all those. We look at the programmatic side of things. We look at the scientific side. We look sometimes at the research that we need to do around the use of these drugs. But we then basically send our report to Merck and say, please send X number of tablets to a certain country where they will be distributed. So I'm actually employed officially by Emory University in Atlanta at the Task Force of Global Health, which is an affiliate of Emory University. My title is director of the Mectizan Donation Program. So I'm not directly involved I'm not directly employed by Merck, but, you know, my salary is mostly supported indirectly by Merck, and mostly by Merck, but a little bit by GSK.
That's a fascinating setup. I mean, you know, some of the things happen, and we see them happening. We don't realize what it takes to really put them together. And that what you just explained there was quite fascinating.
One of the issues is that Mectizan as such is not a drug approved because there's no river blindness in the USA. It's not a drug approved by the FDA. It's approved by some of the European regulatory bodies, but not by the FDA. So Merck, another reason why Merck possibly doesn't make too much of this whole thing is that it's not a drug that's available in the U.S. In fact, Mectizan is made purely for donation. It's not available. You can't buy it at all. But, you know, that's because it's actually manufactured in Holland and it's shipped out of France. As I said, it's not used in the U.S. Sometimes they're a little bit reluctant to be promoting the name Mectizan when it's not an approved FDA drug because that could get them into trouble with regulatory authorities.
But I think what we have here with the news story is what Merck is going through for river blindness and the other things that you're working on. And I guess it's not going to quit. You're going to continue this humanitarian stuff right on out, as far as you know, right?
Yeah, we we used the 25th year. We had special anniversary events in different. We won in the UK, a couple here in the US, and we've you know, developed a strategic overview between now 2013 and 2025.
Mm-hmm.
And the commitment was reiterated by Merck. They will give as much as is needed for as long as is needed. The thing they've added on the end of that statement now, which they never dreamed of adding on in 25 years ago, was until the diseases, this is river blindness and lymphatic filariasis, until those two diseases are eliminated. So, we give that drug until those diseases are eliminated. It's happened in Colombia. It's going to happen in November. We'll be celebrating in Ecuador because all the tests have shown now that there's been no recrudescence in Ecuador, having stopped treatment for 3 years.
Great.
Mexico and Guatemala will be following in a year or 2 years' time. Been tremendous advances. And even in Africa, where the program, the Americas is only 500,000 people,
mm-hmm,
in 13 different small foci. In Africa, it's over 90 million people. And very much more widespread. But even in Africa now, we are seeing areas where it looks like river blindness has been eliminated, the transmission of the disease has been eliminated. So we're now saying by 2025, we may be able to actually eliminate river blindness from Africa. There may be a few pockets left in countries like Sudan and DR Congo, but basically we hope by 2025 to have eliminated the disease from Africa, and the donation will continue as long as is necessary, and we hope by 2025 it won't be necessary anymore. The donation will stop because the disease has been eradicated.
I want to thank you immensely for coming on the program. This has been extremely interesting to me, and I think quite informative to all of our listeners.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, thanks very much. I'm glad to be able to participate.
Oh, you're so kind. Thanks a bunch, Adrian. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Well, a lot of it is, making sure you are meeting the right people, both in the government and out of government. If you're a small business that has a really neat, innovative technology, you really want to get out there and make sure that you're meeting the people in the government who might be able to give you funding, particularly small business innovative research funding. But you also want to make sure that you are meeting with technology-focused venture capitalists or angel investors who might be able to give you some upfront funding, as your project is moving along. And I think you really need to be creative about looking at a number of different avenues. Another avenue could be partnering up with a larger company like a Battelle in order to, have the bigger company who might be able to put the systems engineering around your small technology to make sure that that technology is more robust and interoperable with other technologies, depending on what the application is. And sometimes partnering with a large company that can help you take your small prototype to a bigger level, with other creative investments, whether that be from the federal government or angel investors. My name is Andrea Marsh, and I am the lead business developer at Battelle for its Department of Homeland Security effort.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.